This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, and all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net.
911, what are you reporting?
We got someone or something crawling around out here.
Did you see what it was? Was it a person or an animal? Or
I can't tell. All I know is that my sensor light came on, and I just happened to glimpse and see this thing running across the yard. A good-sized man or something that looks like a man. I don't know what it was. Just that it ran across the yard, and whatever it is, it's running. I couldn't catch it if I was going to chase it. Jesus Christ, you better...
Sure.
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Is he in your yard, sir?
Yeah, God, he's big.
Okay, what's he doing in your yard?
He's looking at me.
Okay. And the guy is on foot.
It's a big, real big person, that's all I can say.
Okay, but it is a person.
Yeah, I'd say it was a person, somebody really big, but he's all in black.
Is he a black male or a white male? Did you actually see whether, or was he just wearing black?
He's all black and he's big. He is big.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. This is Strange Harbor.
It's another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird.
The strange, the unacceptable, the undeniable.
I deny that. I deny that undeniable.
Everyone does.
So, Johnny and Billy here, we talk about weird things like ghosts and cryptozoology. That would be like the study of unknown creatures,
yeah.
Sasquatch, Dogman, whatever, three-headed billy goats. You ever seen a three-headed billy goat?
You know, I never have.
Me neither.
I never have. I bet you could pull up a picture on the internet, though.
Yeah.
There's a picture of everything on the internet.
Near death, that's Bill's that's specialty.
That's my bailiwick.
Yep, and what else? Conspiracies?
I like conspiracy theories because most of them are BS, but there's some that are valid.
You mean like the flat earth?
Yeah, the flat earthers, yeah, they're valid in their own mind.
Have you had any crazy experiences in the last week?
You know, again, I keep seeing stuff in the sky. And
yeah.
I don't know if it's because we're talking about it more.
Yeah.
You know, but... And it could just be, you know, airplanes. It doesn't have to be UFOs. But some of them are kind of weird. But I saw going through the sky the other night what I thought at first was a helicopter.
Mm-hmm.
But then it didn't quite sound like a helicopter. And then it had a red light that was flashing, which is pretty typical of a helicopter and airplane. And then suddenly it had like five red lights.
Whoa.
That started flashing, and they were, you know, bigger than what a helicopter would be.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't sound like there were two of them up there or more, but it could have been. It could have been more than one.
Mm-hmm.
But I just thought that was strange. Not necessarily that it was a UFO. It could have been a helicopter. It could have been an airplane. It could have been anything.
It could have been...
Yeah, it could have been a little of that.
Oh!
Yeah.
Today, we will be talking with David Ellis, who's a core member of the Olympic Project. They're a Sasquatch research organization. They are out to disprove that there is a bipedal, upright, walking, giant humanoid in the woods. They're not out to prove it.
Well, that's,
they're out to disprove it.
Right. That's the appropriate scientific approach.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can't disprove it, then what's left?
Right.
It has to exist. You may not be able to prove it, but you can't disprove it. So if you seek to disprove it or rule it out, as they say, then what's left has to be real, even though there may not be adequate proof to prove it.
There's a term they use, and I can't remember it right off the bat. I find myself watching a lot of documentaries, whether it's kind of ancient alien-ish kind of shows or on ancient Egypt or the Sumerians. Have you caught any good shows with evidence or anything?
No, I haven't. I've been watching crap on television, like
crap,
like Magnum PI, and all the new shows. And I really don't. I generally haven't bonded with any of them yet.
Yeah.
I don't think I will. I think I'm done watching Magnum PI. It's a disappointment. Other than
is there a new one? Is
yeah, it's a new. It's a new one. It's
okay.
All new characters. Higgins is played by a woman. You know, she's good. I like her. She's a good actor. She's, you know, she does a really good job in the role.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy that plays Magnum and the rest of the crew...
Do I know who it is?
Just mediocre. I don't think so. I don't even know who it is. So.
Okay.
And
okay.
Then, you know, and then there's the new character on Lethal Weapon because...
Damon's leaving, right?
No, he's staying.
Oh, I thought he was leaving.
Clayne Crawford was fired last year for having some... I guess some outbursts on the set that they couldn't tolerate anymore.
So pulled a Christian Bale, did he?
Yeah, so they canned him and they brought in what the heck is his name? Anyway, I like the actor. I mean, I like the guy, and they didn't just try to make him the new Riggs.
Mm-hmm.
They created a whole new character and they let Riggs die off, just like they did with Roseanne. You know, they canned Roseanne and then. Change the name of the show to The Conners.
And actually, you know, they didn't just change the name or anything. She signed off on that show because it's all her property, her intellectual property,
right,
and
yeah.
She didn't want them to be without a job. And her contract, apparently, covered Twitter rants to where if she did something on her social media accounts, she had an opportunity, like up to a week, to, you know, apologize, to do this, to do that. In her contract, she chose not to go back because of how she was treated. The whole comment she made with Planet of the Apes, she didn't know the gal, her race at all. She thought she was Iranian, but she was talking about the politics of Planet of the Apes, not the racial thing, but how everything, we're all so hypersensitive and quick to... But anyway, she's just like, no, and she signed off on it, wanting them to keep a job.
Yeah.
So she had to approve that show. But anyway, let's talk to David Ellis of the Olympic Project, shall we?
Let's do that. That's much more interesting than television.
David Ellis of the Olympic Project, welcome back to the show.
Hi.
It seems like we are constantly having Sasquatch sightings in the area, but have we had any recently?
Yes. Well, Grays Harbor has always been one of my fond places to investigate. It seems like there isn't a river in Grays Harbor that flows into the Chehalis that hasn't had some sort of activity. Investigated quite a few. One just recently outside of Hoquiam, tying route, I think it's Highway 109.
Mm-hmm.
There's been several sightings along that roadway. I investigated one, probably 6 or 7 years ago. And then there was a recent sighting that ties that sighting in. It was maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. So that area seems to be a crossing point, Highway 109. And if you look at the way 109 road goes, it goes along the shore of Grays Harbor. So maybe something is coming down to feed on the tide flats and then going back. Interestingly enough, one of the sightings was at night. This witness was turning onto Highway 109 and actually was headed back to Hoquiam when they caught in the tail lights and in a street light the figure of a very large, hairy, ape-like looking creature walking across the road after they had turned. And then when I went to investigate the area, I found a platted or something that had depressed the brambles, and it looked like it could have been laying in wait for cars to pass at that specific location.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And then just recently in that same vicinity, a couple were driving down the road when it looked like maybe something was all dark wearing a hoodie, and then the more closer they looked at it, they realized it was hair, and it walked across the road. I don't know the distance. I'm getting it secondhand, the exact details of the sighting, but it did cross the road in front of them, and it was very close to where this other sighting had happened, so the two tied together. So I think this is the time of the year that all Grays Harbor residents that live outside of the city should be on alert. You may see something that may strike you as strange.
Well, you know, my wife and I frequently walk our dog in that little park that goes right up to the woods that are right there.
Uh-huh.
And the dog is always so excited about the woods. Now, she's excited about a lot of things, but but this is different than when she sees deer or other animals. She's very intense, kind of stands at the edge of the woods and looks and sometimes growls. I've always wondered if maybe there's a Bigfoot in there.
Dogs go on alert, and dogs can go on alert for lots of different reasons. But obviously they have a keen sense of smell and a better sense of hearing than we do, so they would be alerted to more things that are in the woods. I know we can get very close to things. People have talked about how close they came to, you know, bears and cougars and didn't realize they were there until they were right upon them. So, yeah, there's things out there that would probably make a dog go on alert, and Sasquatch is actually one of them.
Yeah, that's interesting. I've always thought that would be a good, probably a good place for a Bigfoot, because it's a very dense woods, and there's houses around there, but nobody really goes walking through those woods.
Well, that's the interesting thing to me, is that the thing about Grays Harbor is places that I would investigate, there were people around, but there was also a lot of woods and a lot of places that they could go to and immediately disappear into the woods, and you wouldn't find them. You wouldn't know where they were. So something that, which I believe that Sasquatch are sentient, aware of themselves, know when it's time to hide and when it's time to obscure. And I've got several stories that are interesting. One of them was a sighting where I thought I was looking at a stump. I was actually in a car, another road crossing scenario, and we came out of a corner as another car was passing us on that corner, and that's important, you'll find out later. But as we came around the corner, I was drawn to this very large stump standing alongside the road, and the car started to slow down, and I later found out why. My attention was on the stump. The driver's attention was on a dog that was running towards the stump coming out of the driveway. He didn't want to hit the dog, so he was slowing down. And I got a really good look at this stump, and it just appeared that there was no reflectivity to it. And that just really made me wonder, what in the world is... It just seemed surreal. And also, what's the stump doing on the side of the road? That made no sense. There shouldn't be a stump in that particular location because of people, utilities and whatnot, cleaning the roadside. The stump shouldn't have been there. It should have been removed. So the whole thing was just surreal. And as we went past it, I said, boy, that was weird. And then the person in the back seat chimed in and said, yeah, that was weird. Now that we have the attention of the driver of the car, and he says, what was weird? And we said, well, that stump. And he said, what stump? He didn't see it because he was worried about the dog. And so this conversation happens for about another 30 seconds, and then he finally stops the car and says, we're turning around. And so he turned the car around and we went back. No stump.
Wow.
The next day we went back and found where something had gone down over the embankment and crossed over a fence line and had tore the brush apart doing so. We walked across the road and found a place where it had also probably been in the ditch, and this is where the other car comes in. My theory is that it waited for the car to go by and then was crossing the road, and we came around the corner just in time to catch it, the headlights on it, so it froze. And I drew a picture of what I saw and sent it to the other witness, and what it was evidently doing, because it looked flat across the top, was that it was had slightly turned its shoulders and ducked its head so that all you could see was the top of the shoulders, and that appeared to be flat to me. So, you know, road crossings happen, and this is the time of the year that you should be cognizant or aware and looking for it. I think Grays Harbor is a hot spot.
I'm kind of looking forward to seeing one.
Better in a car than in person, I suppose.
That's right, I suppose. I would think they probably wouldn't hurt a person unless, you know, they were cornered or...
My opinion. Other people have other opinions that they believe that they're dangerous. It hasn't been my... To date, if I have been around them, you know, there's always that question, really, I suppose. But I have not had any situation where I was maybe threatened, but not to the point where I thought I was in danger of being harmed.
I've seen lots of what might be UFO activity in the area, and I'm wondering if there's a correlation between increased Sasquatch sightings and increased UFO sightings.
There is that speculation, I choose to investigate what I can, which is the physical footprints and recordings of vocalizations. Whether they tie into the UFO thing, like you said, you've noticed the correlation as far as UFO sightings and Sasquatch activity. I think it's something you note, but to be honest, me personally, I can't tie the two together right now. They're two separate issues.
Yeah, I think there are certain times of year when people's awareness is heightened, and that may also be the times when we have more UFO sightings, more Sasquatch sightings, just because there's a greater sense of presence in the environment. You know, people are just distracted.
I think anytime your attention is changed, you're going to notice more. So if you're in tune with the environment, so to speak, you're going to notice more than if you're distracted. So this is the time of the year where people are maybe more in tune with strange things happening, so maybe strange things happen because you're aware that they could happen.
Sure, it's almost Halloween. There's lots of ghosts and goblins out there. But I think that what happens is at the end of summer, you know, we slow down. We start to slow down a little bit. The weather's changing. And as we slow down, I just think we become more aware of what's going on around us.
Oh, I agree with that.
So you talked about a history of sightings around here. Have you personally covered any or all of those past sightings that have been reported?
Oh, I take an interest. There's, out towards Ocean Shores, there's sightings going north towards, what is the, I want to say Moclips, but before Moclips, there's a little town, a little river that's had quite a few sightings in that. But again, I think that if you find the key is waterways. I think that they're traveling the waterways in the lowlands. That's kind of their highway. That's obviously food and water are available. So when it comes to crossing the roads, they don't seem to have any aversion to doing that. whether it's in front of you or behind you. So I guess what I'd like for, maybe we could do a little experiment and see if people over the next month or two have something happen, if they would call in and leave you a little report. The other thing is that I am drawn to recording. If people will record at night, if they're out in the woods, and record something of interest, send that clip to you, and I can analyze it for you.
So what can the average person do that maybe lives around here or plans to vacation here, and they do have a sighting, or what would be the perfect scenario of information to give you?
Okay, on our webpage, OlympicProject.com, we have a sighting report sheet. So if something does happen, we have that at their disposal, and we ask the questions of, you know, what time of day, what did you see, did you hear anything, was it a Class A or an actual sighting, or did you hear something? And then from there we can log it in our, obviously, database, where we take a larger look. So a simple sighting can turn into helping the bigger picture of understanding movement and maybe predictability.
So when somebody makes a report, a sighting,
yes,
and you investigate it, what's that process, that investigative process?
Well, it can be just that they report the sighting to us and request no investigation, or if they want us to come out, we will be more than happy to come out and take a look around. I've even done that with you, Johnny, on one occasion, I recollect, where there was something that seemed to be going on, and we took a look around and confirmed that there's an excellent probability that things are happening at that location. So,
what kind of things do you look for when you go and look around?
Well, a look at travel patterns and reasons to be there. Is there food? Is there water? Is there a curiosity? And in this particular case, there seemed to be a curiosity of being able to look into the houses, or the house that they were living in. That seemed to be a source of possible entertainment, because they reported several times that the house was being slapped while they were in this particular room. So I noticed that they didn't draw the shade, so they became highly visible at night, whereas you couldn't see anything out. So, and then I ask, are they hearing things? Are they missing things? Do things come and go? Do you find objects that have been moved? Those kind of things.
We're talking with David Ellis of the Olympic Project and some of the recent Sasquatch sightings here in Grace Harbor. More coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we got David Ellis of the Olympic Project on the horn, and we're talking about some of the recent Sasquatch sightings here in Grace Harbor.
So if someone wanted to get involved in investigating Sasquatch, how would they get involved?
The best thing you can do is read a lot of reports and become familiar with similar repeating type activities, and then just if they have a report that they are following up on, I would stay in contact with that particular witness and develop a relationship to where you might be able to get more information, because it's usually not a one-off. I tend to work with witnesses over a long period of time. That way you can glean a lot more detail than if you just visit the witness one time.
So are there organizations that people can join to learn more about this, or do they just have to kind of do it on their own?
There are lots of different organizations. The Olympic Project is really a closed scenario. We have done expeditions in the past where we teach people how to collect information, how to cast, how to record, and those kind of things. But we're kind of backing off on that. We've been more in tune with the investigations that we are doing right at the moment. I would suggest maybe joining chat groups and just throwing inquiries out. That's how I did it. And usually there's a group of people that you'll gravitate to that seem to think the same way that you do. I would just say perseverance.
Does it cost a lot of money to do this?
Sure does.
Yeah. And who pays for that?
Be prepared to lose all your extra spending money.
Because we all have so much extra, huh?
Yeah. And that's usually what kills people, because the first thing you do is you start getting equipment, and then, oh, you know what? I can get better equipment. And then, so you go through the equipment phase, and then there's, I'm going to travel all over. I'm getting reports all over the place. So you travel, and the next thing you know, you're spending a lot of money on gas, and then there's time issues. There's a lot that goes into it. So, yeah, you're going to spend some money, so be prepared. Probably your best bet, if you want to get into investigating the Bigfoot phenomenon, is to attend the Sasquatch Summit in November.
Mm-hmm.
So
shameless.
A very large group of people will be there, and you will mix with a ton of great people. And out of that, you will find somebody that you can learn tricks of trade and or befriend them to go out into the field. So I highly recommend, if you have any desire to get into researching, to attend the summit.
We try to represent the different theories.
Yeah.
You know, to where it's not all science,
yes.
It's not all woo, paranormal.
Exactly. Yeah. You will find somebody of the same nature as yourself there. And it's a great place to get new camaraderie. So I would highly recommend attending the summit if you have any desire to learn and to get out into the field.
And if people haven't heard, speakers such as yourself and some of the other researchers, it's really great to go listen to this, because they lend a lot of credibility to the Sasquatch culture. And
absolutely.
It's so good to be able to hear people talk about the research processes and the evidence that they've uncovered, and to show pictures and sounds, and all these things add to the credibility of the existence of this creature.
Yeah, Johnny's created such a great platform for different avenues, different areas of research, different ways of going about things, and all without malice. So it is a great scenario to get together with people. People feel very comfortable at the summit, talking about anything and everything. So you will find lots of different ideas from A to Z. So I commend you guys for putting on such a great display of many different characters, many different researchers. It's just a fantastic conference.
You know, why do you think evidence like the Sierra sounds that Ron Moorhead has provided, and given the lack of technology of when he did this, and the scrutiny that the audio that he's recorded going through such scrutiny, and then, you know, how come it's not made a bigger deal than it seems to be? I mean, to me, that's a big deal of what he did.
Yeah, because science truly is not looking at the subject. Those of us that are dabbling in and around the science, and in cases like Dr. Meldrum, they're not dabbling. And in cases of Dr. Bindernagel, not dabbling. But it just has not gained momentum. On the surface, and that is where most science is on this, on the surface of the thing, no body, no evidence. But when people start digging, well, guess what? There is evidence. Whether it has been vetted to the science detail, I think Dr. Meldrum has done that. I think Bill Munns has done that. But most science folks just aren't. They can live without it. They don't need it. They don't need the aggravation. So why get involved? So it's not that the evidence isn't there. It's just that it hasn't been vetted by large groups of scientists. So, and that's what's needed.
Also, like the thermal video we got from John and Sarah Brown.
Yeah, we had several different folks, and including one of the most skeptical of all the bunkers took a look at that and came away going, I don't know. And that's where we are. Even with good stuff, it's when the good skeptics come away with I don't know, that's a good positive sign for me. Keep it in the suspicious pile. We don't know what it is, but it certainly is suspicious. And that's basically what I've done with audio. There's new and different techniques. Just had a conversation with Ron about maybe going down the path of getting criminal audiologists that, you know, send people away to take a look at it using some of the visual techniques that are available in sound analysis. So he's now looking into that, and maybe over the next couple of years we'll find somebody in that field that will come forward. So we keep pecking away at it. Eventually we'll get there.
Not to change your direction here, but what's the difference between North American Sasquatch and, say, the Asian versions or European versions of Sasquatch?
You know, there was a book that was written by Ivan Sanderson back in the very early 60s called Abominable Snowman, Legend Come to Life.
Yeah.
Where on six of the seven continents, you know, Antarctica, obviously way too cold, but on the other six continents, there are primates of larger size, and traditions and stories on every one. So there is lots of branches to the tree of our evolution, and I think that there are several different offshoots. If every sighting was identical, then I would say we're not dealing with something that's biological. Because even within the human, we have several different, ways we look, sizes. You know, a 7 foot tall Swede and a smaller individual are both human. But if one person were to say, well, they're 7 feet tall, all humans are 7 feet tall, and the other person say, well, the one I saw was only 4 feet tall, we're real. So why wouldn't a Sasquatch have differentiating sizes, looks? That to me means that we're dealing with lots of branches on the evolutionary tree.
And it's surprising when you see people, just normal people, that are radically different in size or shape, how, I guess, surprising it is that, that, you know, we're all kind of the same. I was at an event quite many, many years ago. It was a Special Olympics event. Seattle Supersonics had come out to, you know, to celebrate the kids and be involved in the whole thing. And I was walking down this hall, and about four of those guys came walking up the other way, and I thought, my God, these are monsters. I mean, you know, these guys are like 6 foot eight, 6 foot nine, you know, 7 feet tall. And I'm like 5'7". So,
yeah.
It was just astounding. I mean, I was in awe of the size of these men.
Well, the point I think we're making, Billy, is that we come in all shapes and sizes. Why wouldn't Sasquatch, if it was a biological entity, wouldn't they come in all shapes and sizes?
Yes, I would think that they would.
And the more that reports that we have of differentiation and variation, to me, makes it more credible that they exist than less credible.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I was going with my question, because I know when I was a kid, I was fascinated by a book. I'm not sure it's the book you talked about, but it was a book about the Yeti, also known as the Abominable Snowman. At that time, even in the 50s, I mean, there was a couple of books about him, and it was just, to me, it was just one of the most fascinating things I had ever read.
Yeah. That was always kind of in the back of my mind, too, that there's a possibility. You know, we're all intrigued by the stories, and that part of the world is has its story, too. I'm intrigued with the Almasy, which is a smaller version of Sasquatch, more human-like in stature, but plenty of stories of Almasy in Russia.
Yeah. When we're young, the world seems to be such a huge place. I mean, to me, Asia was almost like a different planet.
Right.
You know, and until I had the opportunity to go there and see that it really wasn't that far away or that much different from America. It's, you know, it was full of people, and they had moms and dads and aunts and uncles and friends and relatives, and they went to school and studied reading, writing, and arithmetic just like we did. This sense that this Bigfoot, this Sasquatch, is unique to America, I think is, it just doesn't make sense to me that there wouldn't be these creatures all over the world.
Right, yeah. No, the fact that they're all over the world is more, again, in the credibility box than less credible.
So, I have a sighting. It's really freaked me out. Comfort me. Make me not freak out because I saw something that's not supposed to exist, and I made fun and teased everybody else that had said they saw one. I made fun of them, and then now I saw one, and I can't believe it. Make me not freak out now.
Okay, well, the first thing I do is I talk to the witnesses about their particular scenario, and then we talk about, you know, I've worked with other witnesses, and they have seen the same thing. And that usually starts the first part of the comfort scenario. A lot of times, the witnesses that I have worked with, it won't take you too long before you realize they have gone through something very traumatic, not unlike a car wreck or a train wreck, or, I mean, they're stressed, very stressed. So I have to, as an investigator, get them to a place where there's comfort so that I can draw out more details, because usually you'll get the repetitive, you know, where they're just focused on one thing and they can't get past that for a little bit. So I just keep working with the witnesses, calling back and forth, emails back and forth, chat quite a bit before we get into some of the details. Because the first thing I tell people is, if this has happened at their home, is that, listen, I have the luxury of getting back in my car and driving home and going away from it. You don't. And that that realization is sometimes very difficult to get over. And so I tell people that, listen, we can stop. We don't have to go fast. You can just drop it now if you need to do that, because your sanity is worth more to me than the story of the Bigfoot. I believe you. I believe that you saw what you think you saw. And so there's that little hurdle. And once they know that they have at least one person that will believe them, then the comfort level starts to come. And that's what we're looking for. We want a very relaxed recollection of the story and what happened and how to keep them from going back and flipping into that post-traumatic syndrome where they're stressed out again. Does that kind of cover what you're looking for there, Johnny?
Yeah. Thanks.
How do we break this?
I feel better already. Yes.
Or was this for a friend?
I was just kind of winging it.
I have this friend.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know him, though. He lives in Canada.
Yeah.
How do we break that stigma that somehow if you see these things, you're crazy or, yeah. You know, that it's not
by
believable?
Making it accessible for people to report it without them feeling like they're going to be ridiculed. So they need to find that source. Obviously, the Olympic Project is one of those sources. And then, you know, most people try to lean on friends, but their friends might not be so accommodating because they may think they're crazy.
Yeah.
So I understand the dilemma, and finding that right core people is, you know, it's critical to their stressed out scenario. I think I'm one of those people that can talk to people and understand. Been through it myself, seen it, so I know from when their stress is coming from, so I try to address that right away.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today and discuss the recent sightings here in Grays Harbor and then, you know, some of the background info.
I certainly hope that the Grays Harbor residents will be calling you with their sightings. It really does help with predictability of moving around. That's what we're hoping to get is, you know, a good idea of where they will be. The more reports we have, the better the jigsaw puzzle comes together.
So if I had a sighting, and I haven't told anybody because I didn't want people to think I was crazy and people to smirk at me when I walk by, you guys have a way that I can tell you what I saw and nobody will know it's me.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Olympicproject.com. They can either reach us by email or they can fill out the report form, or they can do both, and we'll be in contact.
And how do I know you're going to not snitch on me?
That would be counterproductive, wouldn't it?
Okay. I'm asking the questions that someone might ask, you know?
Right, yeah. There is no advantage. We keep everything confidential. There is every reason to do that. Only if you want to come forward, that's totally up to you. We do not encourage that. We tell people the consequences of doing that, and if you still want to go forward, that's your story. But otherwise, everything is totally confidential.
And you have people that, like, share their experience at the summit. You don't ask them to do that. They come to you?
Yeah.
Okay. And they volunteer, hey, I want to talk about my thing with you guys.
Yeah.
And what do you usually say? Okay? Or do you try to talk them out of it? Or?
Well, I find out what the, you know, what the goal is first. Why would you want to discuss it? And most often I want other people out there, if they're going through what I went through, I want them to know that there are other people that are going through the same thing that you're going through now, that, you know, that there are, it's a community, so to speak, I guess, where you get reassurance that you're okay. If you want to just talk about it, great. If you don't want to talk about it, great. Totally up to you. that kind of thing.
It sounds like it can be traumatic.
Well, every sighting that I think is actually a real scenario, you can tell by the eyes, you can tell by the way people are talking, going over the same scenario again and again and again. And judging by their demeanor, they're stressed. So usually I can tell by some visual cues and the way people are talking about it that something really happened. And people that go through this that, first of all, didn't expect it to happen, you know, had no clue that they were out there, you know, those are the people that are usually stressed the most.
Yeah, they didn't have Sasquatch on the brain. They weren't out looking for it.
No. Yeah, you know, they had their life that they were living. And then all of a sudden this happened.
Yeah, it does catch people off guard, I think.
Right.
Anybody that has made a report to you regret that it happened or resent that it happened?
Good question. I think there are people that have gone through the process and come to a point where their personal beliefs about the scenario have come to the point where, yeah, it was a negative experience. I would be untruthful if I didn't say that. But on the most part, most people work through it. It's just that there's different ways that you can look at what's going on and different ways you can interpret things, and you can go down a negative path. It's there, and some people do. Yeah, there are people out there that regret that they talked about it.
Do they regret that they saw it?
I would have to say yes. There are a few people that I've run across, but the majority, no. The majority of the people want people to know what they saw and what happened to them, because, again, they feel like it is part of their path to make those people feel comfortable and know you're not crazy. Some people are just so frightened that they regret that it happened and would just as soon put it behind them.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that in a percentage-wise, it's 90% of the people want to talk about it and discuss it and keep the discussion going forward, and maybe 10% of the people wish that it had never happened to them and regret that they did talk about it.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to listen to back episodes here, past episodes, David Ellis has been on. If you want to get a hold of Bill and yell at him for his new age hooey, log on to strangeharbor.net.
Stay strange.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.